I was standing in the bare living room of my packed-up-and-stored-away home, getting misty, when Hickory and Dickory approached me.
"We would like to talk to you, Major Perry,"
Hickory said to me.
Yes, all right, I said, surprised.
In the 7 years that Hickory and Dickory had been with us, we had conversed a number of times, but they had never once initiated a conversation. At most, they would wait silently to be acknowledged.
"We will use our implants," Hickory said.
"Fine," I said.
Both Hickory and Dickory fingered collars that rested at the base of their long necks and pressed a button on the right side of the collar. The Ulban were a created species. The Khonsu, a race so far advanced of ours that it was almost unfathomable, had found the Oban's ancestors and used their technology to force intelligence on the poor bastards. The Oban indeed became intelligent. What they didn't become was aware. Whatever process that allowed for consciousness, the sense of self, was entirely missing from the Oban. Individual Oban had no ego or personality. It was only as a group that the Oban were aware that they were lacking a thing all other intelligent species had. Whether the Khonsu accidentally or intentionally made the Oban non-conscious was a matter of debate, but given my own encounters with the Khonsu over the years, I suspect they were simply curious, and the Oban were just another experiment to them. The Oban desired consciousness enough that they were willing to risk a war with the Colonial Union to get it. The war was a demand of Charles Boutin, a scientist who was the first to record and store human consciousness outside the supporting structure of the brain. Boutin was killed by special forces before he could give the Oban consciousness on an individual level, but his work was close enough to completion that the Colonial Union was able to strike a deal with the Oban to finish the work. The Oban went from foe to friend overnight, and the Colonial Union came through on Boutin's work, creating a consciousness implant based on the CDF's existing BrainPal technology. It was consciousness as an accessory. Humans, the few who know the story anyway, naturally regard Boutin as a traitor, a man whose plan to topple the Colonial Union would have caused the slaughter of billions of humans. The Oban equally and naturally regard him as one of their great racial heroes, a Prometheus figure who gave them not fire, but awareness. If you ever needed an argument that heroism is relative, there it is. My own feelings on the matter were more complicated. Yes, he was a traitor to his species and deserved to die. He's also the biological father to Zoe, who I think is as wonderful a human as I've met. It's hard to say that you're glad the father of your beautiful and terribly clever adopted daughter is dead, even when you know it's better that he is. Given how the Oban feel about Boutin, it's not in the least surprising they would feel possessive about Zoe. One of their primary treaty demands was, essentially, visitation rights. What eventually got agreed to was a situation where two Oban would live with Zoe and her adopted family. Zoe named them Hickory and Dickory when they arrived. Hickory and Dickory were allowed to use their consciousness implants to record some of their time with Zoe. Those recordings were shared among all the Oban with consciousness implants. In effect, they all shared time with Zoe. Jane and I allowed this under very limited conditions while Zoe was too young to really understand what was going on. After Zoe was old enough to grasp the concept, it was her decision. Zoe allowed it. She likes the idea of her life being shared with an entire species, although like any teenager, she has extended periods of wanting to be left alone. Hickory and Dickory turn their implants off when that happens. No point wasting perfectly good consciousness on time not spent with Zoe. Their wanting to be conscious, talking to me alone, was something new. There was a slight lag between the moment Hickory and Dickory activated their collars, which stored the hardware that housed their consciousness, and the moment the collar communicated with the neural overlay in their brains. It was like watching sleepwalkers wake up. It was also a little creepy. Although not as creepy as what came next. Hickory smiling at me.
"We will be deeply sad to leave this place," Hickory said. "Please understand, we have lived our entire conscious life here. We feel it strongly within us, as do all Oban. We thank you for allowing us to share your lives.
You're welcome, I said.
This seemed a trivial thing for the two Oban to want to discuss with me.
You sound as if you were leaving us. I thought you were to be coming with us.
We are, Hickory said. Dickory and I are aware of the burden we carry both to attend to your daughter and to share our experiences with all other Oban. It can be overwhelming. We cannot keep our implants engaged for long, you know. The emotional strain is so great. The implants are not perfect, and our brains have difficulties. We get overstimulated.
I didn't know that, I said.
We would not wish to burden you with it, Hickory said. And it was not important for you to know. We managed it so that you would not need to know. But recently both Dickory and I have found that when we turn on our implants, we are immediately overwhelmed with emotion for Zoe and for you and Lieutenant Sagan.
It's a stressful time for all of us, I said.
Another Oban smile, even more ghastly than the first.
My apologies, Hickory said. I have been unclear. Our emotion is not formless anxiety over leaving this place or this planet, or excitement or nervousness about traveling to a new world. It is a very specific thing. It is concern.
I think we all have concerns, I began, but then stopped when I saw a new expression on Hickory's face, one I had never noticed before. Hickory looked impatient, or possibly it was frustrated with me.
I'm sorry, Hickory. Please continue. Hickory stood there for a minute, as if debating something with himself, then abruptly turned from me to confer with Dickory. I spent the time reflecting that suddenly the names that a small child puckishly gave these two creatures several years ago no longer seemed to fit in the slightest.
"Forgive me, Major," Hickory said,
finally returning its attention to me.
"I regret I may be blunt here. We may be unable to fully express our concern. You may be ignorant of certain facts, and it may not be our place to provide them to you. Let me ask you, what do you think is the status of this part of space, the portion in which we, the Oban, and you, the Colonial Union, reside among other species?"
"We're at war," I said. "We have our colonies, and we try to keep them safe. Other species have their colonies and try to keep them safe, too. We all fight over planets that fit our species' needs. We all fight each other."
"Ah," Hickory said, "we all fight each other. No alliances, no treaties."
"Well, obviously there are a few," I said. "We have one with the Oban. Other races may have treaties and allies with a few other species, but generally, yes, we all fight. Why?"
Hickory's smile passed from ghastly into rictus territory.
"We will tell you what we can," Hickory said. "We can tell you about things already spoken of. We know that your Secretary of Colonization has claimed that the colony you are calling Roanoke was given to you by the Oban, the planet we call Garshanir. We know that it is claimed we have taken a planet from you in return."
"That's right," I said.
"There is no such agreement," Hickory said. "Garshanir remains Oban territory."
"Well, that can't be right," I said. "I've been to Roanoke. I've walked the ground where the colony will be. I think you may be mistaken."
"We are not mistaken," Hickory said.
"You must be," I said. "Please don't take this the wrong way, but you two are companions and bodyguards to a teenage human. It's possible whoever your contacts are at your level don't have the best information."
A flicker of something crossed over Hickory's face. I suspect it was amusement.
"Be assured, Major, that the Oban do not send mere companions to guard and care for Bhutan's child or her family. And be assured that Garshanir remains in Oban hands."
I thought about this.
"You're saying that the Colonial Union is lying about Roanoke," I said.
"It's possible your Secretary of Colonization may be misinformed," Hickory said. "We cannot say, but whatever the cause of the error, there is an error of fact."
"Maybe the Oban are allowing us to colonize your world," I said. I understand that your body chemistry makes Oban susceptible to native infections. Having an ally there is better than leaving the world unoccupied.
Perhaps, Hickory said. Its voice was noncommittal in a very studied way.